All right, I guess we'll start it here. Hey, everybody, welcome to this new show that we have. It's called Oversharing. My name is Brandon, and I'm joined with Sharon, and we're definitely oversharing today. Today's show is just kind of like an impromptu. We're jumping in kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? It'll come back to me, but it's all right. I feel like sometimes we're going to have this show and it's going to be structured, and sometimes we're just going to kind of jump in. And today's one of those days. And I feel like it's really synchronistic for the first show to have us just kind of jump in. We do have a little bit of a guide of where we're going to go, everybody. So don't be too worried. But let me bring Sharon in and introduce her. She is somebody that I met through Beartaria Times app, and we've made some pretty good connections. We did a lot of tarot readings, and we share a lot of ideas. We're like, you know what? We should start recording some of these conversations we're having, because why not? I think it's something other people would want to hear. So what's up, Sharon? How's it going today?
Good. It's a good day.
Awesome.
It's a beautiful day. Yeah.
It is a beautiful day. And I think it's a much more beautiful day when you don't pay attention to the show, right? To the world and what's going on, to the craziness. Yeah. But there is something that happened allegedly that is very kind of exciting to me. And that is that the military of the United States pulled out of Afghanistan. So I wanted to talk about that today because I've been really, I was in the Marine Corps, and I've been pretty anti-war now for a long time, at least since the mid to early 2000s. And it's not that I'm against fighting or defending anything. It's just that I'm against aggressive foreign wars. I'll just put it that way. And I wrote about it a little bit in my book. And as a little bit of a disclosure for everybody, I used to pay a lot more attention to this stuff. And I haven't really, since 2020 kicked off, I haven't really paid attention to the United States foreign policy at all. And I don't know really what's going on. I don't know. I didn't even know that they pulled out, you know. So if you're somebody who's seeing all the pictures in the media and stuff, just take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. And then Sharon, she's the same way.
Never watched the news. I don't know what's going on.
She doesn't watch the news at all either. So what I'm going to talk about, though, is just because I do have a lot of expertise in this area. I've read a lot about it, and you know, just the past couple of years, I mean, I even wrote about it in my book. And basically what I know is that the Pentagon even released the Pentagon Papers in late 2019, admitting that the war in Afghanistan was a total mistake. They should have never went from the beginning. So we'll just take that as a premise. We'll take the Pentagon's own words at it, right? So but then you find yourself like, what are you going to do? It's because if we pull out, we know this is, and this is what they've been saying. Basically, the generals have been saying this since 2003. If we pull out, it's going to be kind of really bad for a while for the people who are left there, because the people who didn't agree with America being there are going to maybe seek revenge or whatever. And that's kind of what I want to talk about a little bit on this episode, because those principles are kind of timeless and it doesn't exactly matter the facts of what's going on. I'm just going to give people, like, paint a picture of what it must have been like over there and try to give people some insight so they can maybe walk a mile in the shoes of people. So, and again, this isn't to justify anything. I'm not a fan of the Taliban or anything. It's just another government, which is just another something that the people choose, right? So it looks like they chose the Taliban over what the United States was doing. So when you have a country that's invaded by foreigners, what I would always tell people, because they talk about terrorism, it's like, think about if you're living your daily life and then another country comes here for whatever reason, even if it is justified, say something happens and, you know, we have get some crazy dictator that comes in, you know, Joe Biden or Donald Trump, whoever you hate the most, goes full rogue, turns into Hitler, and then the Chinese government comes in and squashes them. And we're like, yeah, thank you, Chinese government. But then they keep their people here. They're like, oh, well, we got to keep it safe. Got to make sure it doesn't happen again. And then before you know it, the Chinese troops are like, you know, in your house and all this stuff. And like telling you what to do, you know. And there's certain people. This is really highlighted well if you look at the TV show Colony. which was, it was like about an alien invasion where like the aliens took over, but it was all the humans subjugating the other humans. And that's what happens. You, in any kind of form of empire, or like when you go to take over a certain part of the world or whatever, historically what happens is, like, we'll look at India. The British were there, but they got other Indians that were the higher class. They pumped their heads up and said, oh, you're better than them and you should rule over them. So they got them to rule over them as a surrogate, right? They were like a buffer. So that's exactly what happened in Afghanistan. There's a lot of people, and it, this isn't a judgment, because there's just a lot of people that when the United States got there, they're like, well, I guess I got to align with the United States or I'm going to get taken out or whatever. So that's who was in power. And then they probably had to do a lot of things that they really regret or didn't agree with or whatever. And I'm sure they were pretty evil things. And now they did evil things to people or whatever it is, you know, they did these horrible things, these acts, and those people have family and those people have memories. So now when the United States or whoever it is that backs these people pull out, these people are left, you know, and now they're in a really tough position because they kind of, you could look at it as they sold out their people. You know, maybe they didn't have a choice. Maybe they did. That's a whole other topic. But again, I'm just trying to give people a little bit of insight here. So it's like, now what do you do? What if it was your family? What if it was your family members that were shot or worse or whatever it was? You know, I don't want to paint pictures, but I'm just saying, what are you going to do? Or what is your, what are their kids going to do? You know, so a lot of stuff that's going on, it's hard to comment on it from that. You know, it's like, I'm not saying it's justified. I wish they would figure out a way to work it out, because it's only going to add to more, because then the other side's going to get mad. Those people they're hurting have relatives. It's just an endless cycle, really. So that's what I wanted to speak on. And the reason that I'm excited, though, is not for that part of it. It's because the bombs have stopped raining on the country of Afghanistan. All right. So maybe it does look terrible and people are getting killed, but at least as of now, there's no bombs raining from the sky. Sharon, your thoughts?
Well, like you were saying earlier, if you put yourself in their shoes, you can think about how they might feel. And if some foreign government, and I could speak to this on a different level, that's more about sovereignty, because our government is foreign to us, American nationals. But that's for some other topic for another day, perhaps. But
could it be we are under occupation, is what you're saying? Yes.
We are. I mean, we're living that. We're living that right now.
And I think maybe that's part of why some people in this country that might call themselves right wing or whatever, pro-military, might be upset. It's because at the end of the day, they realize, well, they might not know, but deep down inside, a part of them knows that they are kind of a slave to this system. And the people of Afghanistan were able to throw it off for something that they perceive as more moral, where the people here aren't able to do that. They just engage in escapism to a large degree, and they, you know, just kind of get their lollies and fancies and just try to ignore it. So it's like the people of Afghanistan were like, yo, we stepped up. How about you? At some, you know, and then the people who are right wing are supposed to be the tough guys. They're just like, oh shit. But so they just, you know, that could be an angle. Could it be? I'm just running bits over here, everybody, you know. Anyway, Sharon, continue. That was great.
Yeah, I was just going to say that if we put ourselves in their shoes, we can begin to comprehend what it feels like and how they must view what's going on or what has gone on in their lives these past however many years it's been.
Almost 20.
It's a long time. But if we look at, you know, like I was saying, we're living it right now because our government really is foreign to us. And they are every moment of every day these days are trying to encroach upon our freedoms. And, you know, what do we do? Well, we have to stand up and figure out how we stop consenting, or, you know, because the more we consent, the more they get away with it.
And, you know, I want to add really quick, because I feel like, so the people of Afghanistan, what they really accomplished. So not, I'm not saying this to you, Sharon, but to everyone who's listening, don't believe the hype. Don't listen to the media. Don't be fooled. Okay. Yeah. Maybe the Taliban were doing some, I'm sure they're doing a lot of military stuff and all that stuff, but what really matters in a war is hearts and minds. And the Afghani people just, what at the end of the day, the reason they held out and won was because they refused to conform to the lifestyle that the United States military was trying to foist upon them. They decided to remain nomadic goat farmers and herders and keep their lifestyle that they've had for thousands of years. And that's why we were never, the United States government, the military was never able to fully conquer them, right? So in India, it was a much different story. If you look back in history, they kind of just took it and were more, because it was more of a passive culture, you know? But the people of Afghanistan weren't having it. And so when you say, you know, we could stand up, what I would say is, yeah, that's, and again, not to like criticize you, but to the listeners, you don't even have to stand up. All you really have to do is live your life the way you want to live it. You know, heal the trauma that's within, heal yourself. When that air mask falls, when you're in the airplane, put it on yourself first. Okay. Get that oxygen and then help the people around you. Because if you just refuse to live the way the government wants, they don't care. They'll leave you alone. They don't, you don't, you're not a threat to them as long as you're not trying to take over the whole government, you know? So that's really the first way. And then if it comes to a point where the people of Afghanistan had to go military, some of them, then, you know, then stand up. But the first thing we got to do, just do what you want to do. And nobody, if everybody just did their own thing, there's nothing they can do. Anyway, Sharon, yeah. Continue.
It just no, don't comply. No, like I just don't comply, which, and I've seen people like, I just, you know, I want to feel bad for them, but you know, again, everything is perfect. Like you said, so you got to let people just do what they do because they're in their perfect journey. Just like I am, just like you are, we're all on this path. But anyway, I see people that they start spiraling and they start worrying about, you know, things like my kids at school, they're now going to force them to do this. And now they're going to force them to do that. And then I'm thinking to myself, they can't force anything. Like you're allowing it. And I don't say this to be mean, but like, you know, no offense, but why do you need their schools? Like children learn just fine at home. But I get it. Everybody's in a different situation. Some people have
I think
in a place where, you know, they have to be somewhere while the parent is at work. So I mean, I comprehend that, but I still think no one can force you to do anything you don't want to do. You allow it, you know?
Yeah. I think it comes from, you know, are you asking for permission or are you just kind of going to do what you want to do?
Exactly.
That cat's chasing a bird. It's part of the show, everybody. I hear what you're saying. And again, people get stuck. People wake up or figure it out and they realize, oh no, the school is just some bull crap. I got to get my kid out of it, but I'm working. What am I going to do? I'm working full time. So it's like, these aren't judgments, people. We just got to go forward and learn the new ways and just kind of trust your instinct. Cause like you said, a lot of people don't realize it. You know, they're like, if I take my kid out of school, how am I going to teach them? And a lot of people don't realize that just by taking your kid out of school and just by having them follow you around, you probably learn a lot more about life and like how to sustain himself in the future than going to a school, you know, and being indoctrinated. But yeah, I'm actually shuffling up a tarot deck right now. This is the Wildwood Tarot, and Sharon knows about this card deck because she has one as well. So I'm going to pull a card here. Okay. I pulled the Hooded Man. Of course I did. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to get that. You've never gotten it?
I don't think I've gotten that card.
Oh, this is number 9, the Major Arcana. It is similar.
Oh, wait, like the 9. Hermit. That's never mind. That's my card. I've gotten that card.
Yeah.
I was wrong. Sorry. Okay.
No, it's okay. Do you have your book? Do you have your Wildwood book with you?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, awesome. Okay. So I'm going to talk about the situation a little bit intuitively, and then you can read from the book, look through and, you know, read a little bit from the book or whatever, read the whole thing. But I'm going to say, so in this situation, we're talking about Afghanistan and, people and listen, people that are listening to this, they might even served in the military. I was in the Marine Corps. Like I said, I was not in Afghanistan. I was in the 90s before that happened. So, but, you might be questioning, you know, your whole, like, what the hell, why did I even go over there and all this stuff? And again, like we, like you said, everything's perfect, right?
Everything happens for a reason.
Everything happens for a reason. So I was taken and put in some places and shown some things and seen things that I also had a question, like, why am I here? So this card, because it's the Hermit, it's number 9. It shows the individual path of the person. Like, this is you. You know, we come into this realm allegedly alone and we leave it alone. But I don't think we really are ever alone, because the other part of ourself, the right brain, is connected to this source allegedly, right? Which is everything we've ever known. So I think part of us that knows that knows we're never alone. And so this is all about getting in contact with that and about, like, kind of like meditating and just taking time each day to slow your brain and getting contact with that other part, the right hemisphere of your brain. And it shows a winter scene, which I really like as well, because a lot of these cards in this Wildwood deck, they show life in green in the woods, right? And like water and ponds. But this is showing the winter, the dark night of the soul. Sometimes when your perspective shifts, you see things a lot different than people around you, and it's hard for you to express how you feel. And this card is all about that, really. So I kind of feel like that's me in the situation a little bit, where, like, I've always had this feeling about that Afghanistan war. Like, I was just like, this just doesn't seem right, right? I mean, in the beginning, I'm like, yeah, we got to go get these terrorists. But then after like a couple months, I'm like, all right, what's going on, dude? Like, why are we even still here? This, and so other people, though, couldn't see it around me. So I had to try to articulate it. And then sometimes I just had to keep it to myself. And then, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Sometimes keeping your ideas and how you feel to yourself when you're around other people that aren't like-minded, because, you know, you could really steer yourself into some disaster.
It's funny you say that, because just thinking about the Tao or the Tao, whatever, however you pronounce it, this morning, and the part about where it says, like, dang it, I already forgot how he says it, but something about the man that knows does not speak.
Yeah, like, it's those who know don't talk, those who talk don't know.
No. Yes, I was thinking about that this morning. Do you know what verse it is?
Not off the top of my head, but if anyone's listening to it, yeah, you could just search that and it'll come right up.
But I was totally telling someone about that this morning, because whatever they said made me think of that exact thing. Mm. But go ahead. Sorry.
That's a really good verse to bring up, because it really is. Again, like, goes back to what we said in the beginning. Like, I'm not an expert on this. I'm just giving my opinion. I'm just trying to open people's minds. We're just trying to create a picture here with our words. And it is true. I have no idea what's going on over there. You know, I really don't, but I'm just trying to say, this is another set that's not being presented to people. What about this? What would you do in this situation? You know, so don't cast judgment so quickly. You have no idea what these people have been through. You know, and again, I'm not justifying any violence. That's not what this is about at all. So yeah, but no, that's a good catch. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. And it's funny also earlier when you talked about, that we get here alone and we leave alone. And, I was planning to put a blog post together, where I was going to entitle it. I still might entitle it that. Naked I came and naked I'll leave, because, you know, you can't, you don't have anything when you come here. And like you said, we're alone, and you can't take anything with you.
Yeah, exactly.
and things, you know? So,
materialistically, but, anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the only things you could take with you are the lessons that you've learned.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
To some degree, you know, I mean, who knows how this works, yeah. But yeah, that's great. So do you have the book there?
I do.
For the nine. What's it say?
It's called The Hooded Man. It says the position on the wheel is at the midwinter solstice on the 21st of December. It's associated with Earth and the dark sun. This is the time of solitude and contemplation. It is the gateway of the dead and rebirth, the womb of the earth. The description says, a lone hooded figure stands before an ancient oak. Do you want to show the card?
Yeah, I could do that. You can keep talking, go ahead.
Thick snow covers the ground and the branches of the tree. The hooded man is dressed in an evergreen holly and berry cloak. He holds a stout staff in one hand and a lantern to light the pathway in the other. In the great tree is a battered and moss-covered wooden doorway. Through the swollen timbers, a warm light spills into the evening gloom. The inside of the great tree appears inviting, a haven from the chilling air. Above the doorway is a wheel-like wreath of holly and evergreen foliage. On a cold stone rising from the frozen earth, a wren watches and waits. So that's the description. And then we have the meaning of the card. After the trials and tribulations of dealing with the primal forces that confront you on the wheel of the year, a space is needed for stillness and contemplation. For the spiritual warrior or seeker looking for esoteric knowledge, the complex matrix of symbolism and insight may confuse the intellect and shake the reality. The hooded man, also known as the hermit, or sometimes as Robin I the Hood, the deeper archetype of the outlaw of Sherwood Forest. Speaking of Sherwood Forest, offers a steadfast light in the midwinter world and a steady staff on which to lean and gather your mental resources. His shining lamp illuminates the darkest recesses of fear and incomprehension and guides the way to the doorway that leads into the heart of the great tree. He knows that knowledge is light and is sometimes only earned with sacrifice and stoicism. Such things offer admittance to the great mystery of the woodland and show the seekers how they may find the wisdom to advance through the wilder reaches of the forest. The great tree itself is one of the most powerful symbols of the forest. Within its ancient heart lie locked countless secrets and the profoundest treasures of wisdom. The hooded man survives even in the cold, empty winter landscape because of his wisdom and his will. He is at one with the harshness of the climate because he draws upon the strength of the evergreen holly that even the winter cannot turn to dust and is stored spiritual nourishment to sustain him. He has absorbed the lessons and knowledge that his journey has afforded him. And to those who have followed his path and now are tired and in need of solace, he waits to pass on his wisdom, comfort, and guidance. On a small rock nearby is the wren, the sacred bird of kings. That's funny. Sorry, inside joke.
Yeah. I'll just explain everybody because, so anyway, we were just talking about like kings and like how people should exist in nature and or like how humans should exist. Should they have a king and all this stuff or like a ruler? And Sharon's like, well, look at nature. There's no king of the birds. And I just thought that was hilarious. So we were just saying king of the birds and I drew a little king of the birds. And now she just said, this is the bird of kings. So yeah.
The sacred bird of kings. That's funny. Revered as an oracle and the keeper of secret wisdom. The wren is an ancient totem bird that flew highest of all creatures by riding on the back of the great eagle, thus earning itself the title of king of all birds. Shut the heck up. Shut the heck up. Where did this come from?
I don't know. That's hilarious. So
what? I'm going to read that again. That is weird. So it's a sacred bird of kings, as in it's the king's bird, but yep. Then it says it's earned itself the title of king of all birds. What the heck?
I guess birds do have a king, Sharon.
Tiny little red bird too.
That's great.
It serves as a reminder that the smallest of the Earth's creatures is capable of soaring to the greatest heights and seeing beyond the furthest horizon. This time of rebirth is both inward and mystical, and yet outward and universal, beyond the narrow boundaries of human civilization and moral codes. There are two more little things to read. One is called Reading Points. Reading Point says, the time of the hooded man is here. Whether he appears in the guise of an inner guide and mentor or simply as a state of mind, you will understand that now is a time to withdraw and rest. After a long journey through the wildwood, many emotions and experiences need to be absorbed. This is the beginning of understanding, not just of yourself, but of the universe. The hermit-like hooded man appears differently for everyone. Whether through meditation or solitude in the mountains, through prayer or holidaying in a secluded place, his light will illuminate the way to the heart of the endless cycle of being. And then there's a few bullet points called roots and branches. The path of solitude, the final truth, the still small voice of calm, meditation and communion with the self, the light of knowledge, and the last bullet is inner depth. Wow.
Yeah. So I would, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say that this really, there we go. what it's kind of telling me for the situation is just like the people of Afghanistan just need to be left alone, you know, like they can figure it out. They just don't want to be part of, you know, what the West or whatever it is. They don't want to partake in it. You know, it's very obvious. So it's like, just leave them alone, man.
They're being imposed upon. They don't want that. They want to be left alone and live their, like, that is natural law. Like, can we be left alone to live our lives, please? Like, government should not be encroaching upon our rights to, you know, liberty and happiness. Ridiculous.
Anyway, what else were we going to talk about today? I think that about covers the Afghanistan thing.
Yeah, so we had talked about before a little bit about I had some questions for you about like what karma and dharma really are. I wanted to kind of maybe comprehend that a little bit better, but I also wanted to talk about like when people do certain things and they potentially trigger us, and like, what does that say about like the reaction we have? What does that say about
us? So if somebody around us,
And I'm maybe not wording it correctly, but something to that effect.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's kind of like our reactions to what happens around us. You know, we're people who try to work on ourselves and stuff like that. And then, or even if you're not, if you're just blame somebody around you for something that happens, like, you know, if you're around and you're hanging out and somebody comes in and does something and it pisses you off and you have a bad reaction, it's like, well, what, you, like you're saying, well, is that bad reaction their fault or your fault?
Yeah.
Or a little bit of both, or who knows what, you know. And The answer, the long and short of that answer is it's both. It is. It just depends on how you're looking at it. Right. So you could, yeah, you could blame that person for, you know, pissing in your Wheaties or whatever they did. Or you could just look at it from the other point of view of why they did it, you know. But we'll get into that a little more, but that's just a quick, to give somebody a quick preview of what it's going to sound like. And the first thing, go ahead. No,
go ahead. And then I'll.
I was going to start getting into karma and dharma, but before I do, yeah.
Please go.
Okay. Did you have something to add about that though? Cause.
Well, we can expand upon it as after you tell me about dharma and karma.
Gotcha. Okay. So, I wrote about karma a while ago on a blog post, years ago, and my understanding, and it's still pretty close to what that is it's, think of it like we're all in an ocean. We're all bobbing upside down like with floaters. We have floaties and the waves affect us. So the karma, every time you create an action or every time you do something in the world, you're going to create a wave. And it's going to affect the person around you and it might come back to affect you as well. So when there's a misunderstanding with karma, people will say, oh, if you do something, that's bad karma. And if you do bad things are going to happen to you. That could be true, but that's not always how it works. It's more, if you're out there doing things in the world, it's going to affect the people around you in that way. And if it's perceived as negative, if it's perceived as a negative action, people are going to be negatively affected. And, you know, say you're out there punching people in the face. You know, I used this in an example in an early video I did. You're just running around punching people in the face. Well, I mean, you might get away with it, but everything that happened, now all these people are having a bad day, it's going to circulate around and it could come back to get to you, but it's just going to make the world a different place because of it. And that's more how karma works. It's just really an unseen thing that's around us. So like if I talked to you or if I threw something at you, you could see that. But this is just my actions that'll affect you in a different way. It could even be like mentally, you know, like I could do something that screws you up, and then it's because of those actions, it's just going to change everything in the world. And people don't see it directly because it's not like there's a string attached to any, you know, but it's like this idea of a string being attached to your emotion and every action you do. Cause it's like, if you come up upon a still pond and you throw a giant rock in there, those waves are going to go for a while. So it's the same thing. Every action, once it's out there, it just keeps, it has a life of its own until it could be either absorbed or maybe counterbalanced by what's called a positive action. So if you're out there and somebody is doing something to you that you don't like, just like, you know, Jesus says, love your enemy, right? And people say, well, how do you love your enemy? Well, if you're out there and someone's doing something you don't like, you have a couple of choices of what you could do. You could, you know, like if you come across someone who's punching people in the face or someone who's about to, or maybe is getting violent, you have a couple options, right? You could use the positive expression of force through self-defense to stop this person. You could try to use your words. You could just let it happen. You could, you know, there's all these things. And then from there, other actions happen. So say you're the kind of person who is able to diffuse the situation with your words, and you maybe do it through humor or comedy, and you make fun of yourself and you just make people laugh and just disperses the situation. Well, now all those people are going to go away having a positive experience from that. They're going to remember it, and that's what their day is going to be based on. Then they're going to treat people in their life based upon that, and it's going to pay it forward, right? Say instead you decide that you're a martial arts expert, so you hem the guy up and choke him out. And, you know, he hits his head, something happens. Then now you have this feeling, everyone around you see this happen. They're all affected in this way too. And again, I'm not saying any of these things are right or wrong. It could be called for. You might have to do that. You might have to choke somebody out because they're going to a threat to other people, you know? So that's really what karma is. You're just looking at these actions, and the way we have a choice is, or the way we have, you know, the free will is that choice of how we can handle the situations as they're brought upon us. We can't ever just, you know, it's not our decision if this guy is going to stumble out of a bar drunk and start shit right in front of us. You know, we're just walking down the street. We're just responsible for how we handle our reaction to that. And that's how we can influence karma. And then to get into Dharma, they say that once a person is on their path, that's kind of like their Dharma, like their life path, what, you know, their meaning, to fulfill their meaning here while they're here. And people get really, that's one that you could just get lost in for like a lifetime, trying to figure out like, what's my path, all this stuff. And to bring it back to the Tao, everyone's on their path. Like, you're always on your path. The way, like, one of the jokes about the Tao is like, what's the way to the way? Like, what a question. Like, how do you,
you know, you're on the way.
Yeah. So we are on our path. I think it's about discovering that, because when you discover you're on your path and everything has got to happen to get to that, you don't take it so personally. Right. And then as you're not taking it personally, you're not creating karma anymore, because you're not looking at people as objects. You're kind of, you're like, oh, I get it now. And you're not blaming other people. You start to, you have a reaction. You're like, oh, why did I have this reaction? What was inside me that made me have this reaction to this person's negative behavior? Like, why? When you start asking yourselves questions, you start to absorb all this negative things that are out there. So if somebody goes crazy, then you're able to just diffuse the situation or whatever. Maybe not the first time, maybe again, you know, as we do it again, like, it's a practice, right? I'm not saying I can do this and I'm perfect. No, just because I look like Jesus, it doesn't mean this is how I, trust me, I get anger and, you know, so it's a practice though. And as we do that though, we are absorbing now this negative stuff. So that's why we're kind of on our, we're doing the Dharma now, we're doing the work. And that's really what I feel this is about. When they say the world, I think of it as WHIRLED. It's just this whirl of a mess, right? But just like anything else, it's going to come back into order. It's like order than chaos. Order. It's like a, so I feel like everything that's happening is a result of what had happened before, the trauma, the bad things that happened before, but now they're just correcting themselves. So it's like a top that's spinning. It's going to wobble. I guess that might be a bad analogy, but I think everyone knows kind of what I'm getting at. So, and again, people take this ideology and will use it to subdue people. They can use it to get people to be docile in religions and to go along with their thing. Just say, hey, everything's perfect. Don't worry about it. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a situation arises and you have two choices. You could say, oh, woe is me. Why did this happen? Oh, this is bullshit. This is fuck this. This shit always happens to me. Or you can say, all right, this happened. Now what do I do? What's the positives out of this? What can I do? How do I move forward in a positive way that I'm not going to hurt myself or the people around me, and I'm going to turn this into a positive, or whatever I got to do. Like, this is just something that happened. There's nothing I can do. Time machines don't exist. But yeah, no idea. Time machines don't exist. This thing happened. Just accept it, move forward. And that's when you're accepting it, and you're also absorbing that karma that other people put out there. And it might even have been your own karma. You might have put that negative energy out there.
Yeah, like I was gonna say, is it a wake-up call? Like, is something like telling me I need to, if it keeps happening over and over, it something the universe must be trying to tell me.
That's a great point. Great point. Yeah, because I feel I've noticed that in my life a lot. And it's kind of like a video game, right? You get to this point and you can't overcome it. Sorry, I thought I heard a weird cat noise or something. Like, there was a groundhog that, it'd be great if we were recording yesterday, because a groundhog just like scurried across the backyard right after I got my cats. And I think the cat had it at bay hiding, even though I think she probably just wanted to play with it, because they're the same size. It's not like, anyway. So,
groundhogs are the same size as cats.
Or maybe it's a woodchuck. I think we call them groundhogs.
I don't know.
It's not a mole. So people confuse moles with groundhogs. Moles are the small ones with the pointy noses. Groundhogs look like a beaver without a fat tail, kind of.
Huh. Okay.
Like Punxsutawney Phil. You ever see the movie Groundhog's Day with Bill Murray? Dare you. Anyway, that's right. Look it up later. They get big because they're the things they pull out of the cage, and if they see their shadow, they go back in, you know, Groundhog's Day.
Yeah, no, I've heard of that. I just, calm down. I didn't watch the movie, okay? Maybe I did, but I don't remember. It's the funny part.
It's okay. Well, anyway, go ahead. So,
I don't know. We were just talking about, like, if the world, if something keeps happening to you, then the universe.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of Groundhog's Day, perfect example, because that movie is that's what it's about. So the movie is that, most people probably have seen it, right? So it's Bill Murray is in the situation where he's a reporter and he goes down and he has to report a Groundhog's Day thing happening, and he finds himself caught in this loop where every time he wakes up the next day, he's stuck in the previous day. It's the same day over and over again, right? Yeah. So that's a great example, because in there he had to get his whole life straight all in one day, right? Which, it's maybe a little nod that's saying, hey, it can be done, but that's the fucking, that's rough, right? Not all of us, that's the easy way. Most of us prefer the side paths. That's what they say in the Tao. Speaking of the Tao, he says, you know, the great way is easy, but most people prefer the side paths. And that's what we're here for, is because all the trauma and all the crap we went through, we have to get out of that and step out of it and figure it out. So as we do that, we, as it comes up, we try to work with it and heal it and see what this is and where it comes from. Like Bill Murray does it all. It takes him hundreds or thousands of times, right? But he gets it all to do it in one day. So if you just look at the inverse of that, it's just like, it's a daily thing. You just work on it every day. And then one day you'll, and again, this, the Hollywood, like, gravel, quote unquote, whatever you say, like the Hollywood lie that's in there is that he lives happily ever after. And that's never happens. So this is about waking up to it and then saying, oh shit, I got to change certain things, and then just working on it. And then knowing once you start that path, you should start to congratulate yourself. I always say this, pat yourself on the back, because you're doing something that most people in this realm aren't doing. They're just, you know, doing the escapism thing, the thing that I was doing for years of my life. I didn't stop till my mid 30s. So, you know, it's not a judgment, but what I'm telling people is, congratulate yourself, do it, because you're your own hardest critic.
Yeah. Doing the inner work.
Yeah, man. Because we are ascending in that way. You know, we're coming into the new, people say new age, and the consciousness is evolving and all this stuff. That's kind of how it is. It's one person at a time. We're all just figuring it out. And then as we do, we could pass it on to the next person. Then it just goes in a wave. And then one day most people will be this way, and that's how it'll be. And then it'll just come back again the other way. Maybe, who knows, you know, like, but for me, it really helps to just kind of enjoy the time that I'm in, to just know, you know, I was such a big fan of history, and I'm like, wow, what, how would be crazy to be around during the time of the Romans. And I'm sure a lot of people thought that, like, I'd love to go back to ancient Rome. Well, guess what? There's probably a lot of people in the future going, man, I wish I was around in 2020. That would have been fucking crazy. I wonder what I would have done. Well, guess what? You're here. So fucking enjoy it. I don't know what to, right?
Take advantage of it.
Yeah. Get out there, man.
Learn something from it.
Learn.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you think about the karma and dharma thing, though? Do you have any questions specifically more about that? Where do you want to take that?
That was helpful. That, because the first time you explained it to me, I just had that whole not the correct view of what karma was. Like you were saying, mm-hmm. the one that people always mention, which is like, karma's a bitch, you know, that sort of thing. But what, the way you explained it, and you did explain it to me before, like I said, but it needed to sink in. And I think it's making more sense now, as to what it is and then what dharma is, which is like your path. And since you're, you know, since everything is perfect, then you are on your path. You're always on your path. It's yours. Yeah. But when I was just going to bring up the topic of like people's behaviors and how they can expose things that maybe we need to look at in ourselves. But yeah, I wonder, like, are there any times when we're justified in feeling the way we do about somebody, or like, is it always the case that our reaction, like our negative reaction or our dislike of something, always points to something within us.
That's a really good question, Sharon. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. So this is the thing that I noticed because I participated in like a 1 week of Ramadan, because I guess okay. I'm one quarter as cool as Muslims. So where I fasted during the day, and it really brought out the hangriness in me. You know, I'm already fast pretty much most of the day anyway, but I don't stop myself if I get hungry. Sometimes I get hungry at noon and I eat. Sometimes I don't eat till dinner. But this time I was like, I ain't eating till the sun comes down, baby. So it was brutal. And especially, you know, you get it in this culture where we eat so much. But anyway, so I found myself very hangry. And so I've had anger issues my whole life. Like, I identified with the Incredible Hulk when I was a kid, like five. He was my favorite superhero, was the Incredible Hulk. I'm like, this guy gets it. And I used to carry this Incredible Hulk with me everywhere. I'm like, guys, this is a warning. Just be cool. You know, like, I'm five and I'm carrying the Incredible Hulk. Maybe you should take that as it now. Yeah, I'm running bits. So I've worked on it a bunch, and I, you know, through meditation in the past few years and stuff, I look at things a lot differently. So now I learned to use my anger more as a gauge. And so if I start to get angry, I feel a little more justified now. Right. So I'm like, okay, so I'll act on it a little more, I guess. So as I was getting hangry, I'd act on it and I would snap more, and I'm like, wow, look at this. So I'd have to look at my own behavior. Right. So a lot of it does have to do with being a reflection of, you know, other people's behavior pissing you off. And then you're like, well, it's because it's a reflection of what you see in yourself, and you're mad, but you just don't want to confront it because that's the stuff that nobody wants to do. That's a lot of it, but it doesn't always have to be that. And also, I do want to say that the word justification is very interesting. So yeah, I do feel that people, oh yeah, they are justified. So if somebody comes in and says something to them and pisses them off, they're justified to feel, to have a reaction because something was done to them. But again, you have a choice. And the reason, also the other reason I say they're justified is just because it's okay. Because the core thing I'm trying to say here is we don't want to be hard on ourselves. That's the most important thing, is not being hard on yourself. And then the rest, like if you murder somebody, it's not right, but don't be hard on yourself, right? Why did this person deserve it? No, I'm just running bits again. But what I'm saying is, don't be hard on yourself. I'm not advocating murder, everybody. Don't be hard on yourself though for your actions and your past actions, especially if you weren't really, you know, people say woke up. Like if you were Neo, still asleep in the Matrix, and you were part of doing things or whatever it is, you know, it's after you have that awakening, then that's when it starts to really weigh on you. And that's when you focus on that. The past is more using as a guide, because those actions, like we said earlier, it's already done. You don't have a time machine. The only way you can undo it is to heal the way you act to future situations because of the things that have happened in the past. If not, you're just perpetuating that cycle. Just like Bill Murray, you're living every day in Groundhog's Day because of something that happened to you when you're 3, 5, 6, 2 months old. I don't know. Shit happens to all of us in this culture, you know? And at the end of the day, I'm even writing a little bit of a blog post about it. I just see it, to simplify it, it's like you either look at yourself as a victim or you look at yourself as not a victim. And I'm not a victim. And if you want to be a victim, that's okay. There's a reason you need to keep doing it and seeing something. You have to see something. Because I'm sure I look at myself as a victim in some, I do it when I'm driving. If someone gets in front of me, they're going slow. I'm like, how dare they? Like, I act like my life is more important than theirs. So I still do it. I'm not perfect. But consciously, I will say that I'm not a victim because it helps me. Because, you know, no matter what happens to me, I'm really not a victim at the end of the day. I mean, I guess you could say if somebody comes up and confronts me, that's a little different, and like physically assaults me, then I'm a victim of physical assault. Okay. What I'm saying is I'm not a mental victim to people's control, right? So at the end of the day, when somebody's displaying some behavior, they're trying to manipulate you for the good or bad. You know, they could be like saying, I really want to go eat at, you know, I really want to go eat at Friendly's. Let's go to Friendly's or TGI Fridays or whatever. And they're like being real nice to you, but they're trying to influence your behavior, right? So anyway, I think I'm getting lost in the weeds here. Sharon, pull us back.
Yes. Yeah, so
we're oversharing way too much here, Sharon.
Oversharing.
Bring us back, Sharon.
Okay. So I was wondering if there ever is a time when we are
justified. Okay.
Justified.
I think physically
feeling that, and I don't want to say that we're victims, but.
Okay. I want to make a quick distinction. That's where I was going.
Okay.
I was going to, I just muted myself. All right. Can you hear me now? All right. So, I think there's an important distinction to be made here. So I'm talking about victim of somebody who's trying to influence your behavior through their behavior by like talking and stuff like that. I'm not talking about if somebody physically assaults you or if somebody's trying to threaten your life or threaten your family or they punch you or shoot you. Yeah. Then you're a victim of a physical assault or shoot. Then, you know, you're well within your rights, in my view, in most people's view, in natural law, I would say you're well within your rights to take action at that point to defend yourself. And even before physical harm comes to you, if it's obvious it's going to come, I feel you do have the right because then you will be a victim. I just wanted to get that out there. What I'm talking about is if, you know, say somebody comes in and you're in a living situation that's not optimal, you know, say you have a roommate that you don't get along with or something happens and you move in with family or a friend or something, right? And then it's just not going too well, right? That kind of stuff. Or we say you work with somebody who's a real asshole, like your boss, and they just set you off all the time. This is the stuff I'm talking about now.
Because
you have a choice now whether how you react to that situation. And that's what I meant. You could punch them in the face because they said something about you. And a lot of people would think you're justified, but then the jury and the police might not agree. You know, so that's what I'm talking about. It's letting people get worked up, letting them rent space.
Right. In your head. Okay.
So now I want to bring that back too. Is this what you're talking about? Is it you're just talking about people through their actions by talking to other people and manipulation, but no physical?
Right. By just being themselves, whoever they are, and in some way potentially annoying you. Does that annoyance always mean there's something wrong with me because I'm annoyed?
First of all, there's nothing wrong with you, Sharon. Sharon, there's nothing. Sharon, stop right now. I just want to say we're going to take a break to say how much we love Sharon because she's perfect and there's nothing wrong with her. Anyway, go ahead.
Why, thank you.
You're awesome.
Aw. So, if somebody is like annoying you by their behavior.
Yes.
And it could be as simple as like you said, let's pretend there's a roommate situation or something. And, or you like somebody had to move back in with their mom for a minute or whatever, or their mom came over to visit and, never really follows instructions or something. So you say like, okay, mom, hey, like when you're out in the backyard, please don't feed the plants or don't water them because I have them on a schedule, whatever, like just as an simple example.
Yeah. Something. Yeah. I hear you. Okay.
And then they completely and deliberately do it on purpose. And I mean, I'm not saying do it on purpose. I don't know I don't know why they're doing it. Right. Mm-hmm. Let's say not me, but like whoever, let's just say the person who, you know, went through this and then their mom actually goes and does that. And then you ask them later and then they say, no, I didn't do that. And you're like, there's no one else in the house. It doesn't make sense that you didn't do it because I didn't do it and there's no one else in the house. So
you're asking, is it okay for you to be annoyed at that point?
Yeah. I feel like there is, it's fine to be annoyed, right? Like, duh, like that's obvious, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Again, because when you're asking me if it's okay or not, it's...
Like not if it's
no, no, no. I'm not.
This, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm asking. Go ahead.
Okay. So let me go. Okay. I got it. So what I would say in that situation, what I would say in that situation is it's a little mixed, right? Because the person watered plants, so they did something physically and they might've affected them. So that's really going to upset the situation. But what I'm saying in this is you have two ways to view it. You can back up and you could say to yourself, all right, well, you know, some plants died. What am I going to do? They're already dead. You know, this person, you already said the key. You have no idea why they did it, why they go out and water it. Maybe they were trying to help me. They're coming from a place.
They potentially feel like they're trying to help.
They're trying to help. And then what could that say? Maybe it's a passive aggressive move because they think that I can't take care of myself. So they're here at my place watering my plants because they think they know better than me. But that's, see, this is the thing. Those are all thoughts in your head. That doesn't mean that that's their intention. And then even if it is, let's go even further, right? Then you'd say to yourself, well, okay, if they think all this, why do they think that? Oh, it's probably a negative projection on themselves because they see something in them that's wrong. Or maybe they see that, you know, maybe I am succeeding here without them and that makes them feel like they're useless. They have no use in life. Or maybe they're watering the plants because they want to feel useful. So as you play these exercises with yourself, the victimhood starts to disappear. So yeah, it's okay to still feel that way as a victim or annoyed, because it is very annoying behavior. But what does that behavior do for you? What does that feeling do for you? That's like, all. It doesn't hurt anyone else. Is you're just hurting yourself. So go ahead.
Good point. It's good. It's good what you're saying. Like, I get it, because it doesn't matter what happened. Like, even if I'm annoyed by something, or anybody, you, if you're annoyed by something, if we look at it like we're looking at it right now, objectively, like as if we're not the ones who it happened to, but like, we're talking about some, maybe a friend of ours or somebody, and that's happening to them. And like, we think about it in that way, it helps us identify, at least it helps us not play the victim, and not get caught up in feeling like a victim. And yeah. I get that it's hard. I'm not saying that that's easy, but I'm just trying to
help me
to understand. Oh, yeah. Think about it.
You're enunciating it very well. I like that. And one other thing that you could say, you leave it as a mystery, right? So it's kind of like when people get into a debate about like God and what God is and like my God and all this stuff. So another thing you could do is if it's something you can't prove, you just say to yourself, it's a mystery. We could ponder about it or whatever. So you say to yourself, well, it's definitely a mystery why this person watered my plants, you know, in their head. I can't get inside there. So you relegate it to that. And then again, it's not easy. It's just, this is kind of what meditation helps you with, because you start to realize that your thoughts are just thoughts. It starts as a feeling and then it becomes a thought and then it can become an action, you know? And if you just stop it when it's a thought and go, it's a thought, and you let it go. But if it keeps coming back, sometimes there is a reason. You know, sometimes there is some action that needs to be taken. Maybe you have to draw a boundary. Maybe it is still your fault that they're doing this action because you didn't ever, maybe you told them not to water the plants, but you weren't serious about it or whatever it was. Or maybe you got to tell them again. Maybe you say, listen, hey, I love you, but these plants are dead now. You know, look who you did, or whatever it is. And then if you don't, if it happens again, then it's on you kind of at that point, you know?
Right. Because like you said, the boundary thing, like you have to come to a place where you draw some boundaries.
And sometimes really quick though, sometimes it's not worth it. Sometimes most times you just let it go because.
Yeah.
Maybe not most times. But
materialistic things. It's just a plant, or it's just.
Well, it depends on where that behavior is going to lead to. If it's something that's going to get worse, sometimes you squash it. Like the Tao says, take care of the small, you know, take care of the large when it's still small. It's good. But sometimes you just let little things go. But, you know, then though, when you let little things go and they keep coming back, that's when you have to address it. You know, it's tricky. It's a tricky thing. But when you start to, I'll just say from my own experience, when I start to focus my thought process in this way, and it's hard to do, I don't do it all the time. Maybe I do it 20-30% of the day. Maybe, you know, maybe sometimes it's more, but when you start to do that, you just are filling your head with more positive thoughts anyway, and you're just looking at life in a different view. So it's like a positive self-talk over a negative self-talk that we're kind of, seems a lot of people in this society have a negative self-talk going on. Like, I would definitely suffer from it a lot worse in the past. Still now a little bit comes in and out, but you know, it's like, that's the real struggle, right? The internal struggle is the one within. That's the one you're trying to fight. It's that voice that's telling you these things. So, yeah.
Good talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I think we could probably wrap it up pretty short. Oops. Did I just mute myself again? Unless there's anything, I'm sure you probably want to have some final words or whatever, but I think that's a good spot right there.
Yeah. I don't, I can't think of anything else really, but yeah, this topic is something I wanted to talk about for a little while. And just try to understand it a little better. And yeah.
You feel like you have a better understanding now then?
I do. Although, I mean, I didn't explore everything. Yeah, but it's okay. I do. I like what we talked about, because it brings it back to like not being the victim. And that is really key, really huge.
Yeah. It's a practice, you know, every day. Yeah. You just try to say, how am I looking at myself as a victim in this situation, or am I not? And I think when you do it that way, you can kind of, the way I do it is I kind of make fun of myself. You know, you can even use little voices and just like, I'm such a little, you know. And then it just becomes a game at that point. So then you're playing with yourself. Oh God, that was terrible. So then you're playing a game and you're approaching life as a child, not immature and not childish, but as a child, you're looking at wonder and you're just like, oh, how can I approach this situation? And why is this person acting this way? And you can kind of throw people off, you know, in a good way. So, and that's when you're on your dharma and you're absorbing those karmic waves that are out there.
Yeah. And the topic about the boundaries, setting the boundaries, that's huge too.
Yeah. That's something we could talk about in the future more too. All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening. This has been Over Sharon with Sharon and Brandon. And if you want to reach us, I guess at this point you could go to my website, morelawsmoreproblems.com. Check us out on the Beartaria Times app. I am Bonanza Bear on there. And
Bellissima.
How do you spell that?
Bellissima.
There you go. All right, guys. Until next time, keep oversharing.